Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm a very punchy Gov Maharaj.
Very tired.
Very
welcome
tired.
To Defrag, by the way. We've been off for a while. We had build.
You had vacation?
I should probably mute my machine, by the way. We had build. You had vacation?
No,
I had
you,
vacation.
You had
the week after I had some vacation. First vacation I've had in several years.
How was that?
I did nothing. I just had to sleep.
Decompress.
Yeah, for the most part. And then last week, FY15 planning, which is quite a bit more involved than in the past for me. So yeah, it was...
more responsibilities.
Something like that.
More money, more problems.
All right, so first question from Ian. He says, I've been wondering if I could use Windows to Go in the workplace as a diagnostic environment on customer laptops. We're repairing, but I'm confused about the licensing terms. Which I read that weird, but that's fine. We have software assurance at work, but does the license only allow Windows to Go to be run on computers owned by the company or an employee of the company? If we use it on a customer's laptop that we have repaired, does that breach the license terms?
No, so the whole point of Windows to Go is you
can,
is to go. The hardware doesn't matter. The license on the USB stick or the external drive, that's the thing that matters. An alternative approach would be using WinPE as your diagnostic environment. The MDT, the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, has a WinPE, a diagnostic version of Windows that you can use. It's much lighter weight, of course, so it's not a full operating system. You're not able to do as much.
Yeah.
But yeah, you should actually have no problems with your Windows to Go on the customer laptop for diagnosing. It's just at that point, you know, you're basically just doing data recovery, mm-hmm. right? Because your Windows to Go is the thing that's actually being used,
yeah.
right? When you boot up that system, we don't automatically mount the drives that are physically located on the machine.
Yeah.
So you're gonna have to auto mount, or you're gonna have to mount those manually in order to do any kind of data recovery. It may be just simpler for you to use a PE for like things like virus scanning and, yeah. and things like that.
Okay. From Benjamin, I've been I'm trying to disable DPI scaling in Windows 8. However, though I set it at the lowest value on the control panel. Even after rebooting, you can tell DPI scaling is still on because modern apps appear larger when programs stop responding under the desktop. You can see them shrink inside the window frames. How do I completely disable DPI scaling?
So modern apps are going to scale. They're designed to scale. Mm-hmm. So it would be kind of interesting to why you want to turn it off. The DPI scaling is... to turn it off at 100% is going to be on the desktop only. Under settings, change PC settings, PC devices, display. The best that you can do is, so right now I'm connected to a secondary display.
Sure.
You can change the size of the app's text on the screen. You can also just change your resolution to be one of higher resolution, assuming that you can change it. Mm-hmm. And that's really the best that you can do in the modern interface.
Okay. All right, and then this was a question that was up on Reddit from Jason, and he said, I was uninstalling some files. I noticed I have like 20 different Microsoft Visual C++ redists, mostly from installing games. So he says he has C++ 2008 redist x86, he's got 2005, 2012, another 2005, X64. And he's asking, can I just delete any of these?
So the thing with those redists is that they live side by side on your system.
Yeah.
It really depends on what you still have installed that depends on those particular versions of the redist. Mm-hmm. If when you were installing that version of the redist with a particular game and you uninstall that game, if nothing else depends on that version of the redist, yes, you could uninstall it.
And uninstalling the game wouldn't automatically.
It would not automatically
redist anyway. So.
No, because it's a shared component.
Is there any way to tell if you have any dependencies on that?
Not really. Not until you actually, you know, run whatever application that.
Does it hurt anything to just leave them? What would
really.
Gov do?
I would personally just leave it.
Yeah.
It's not like it takes up that much space. Because if I recall correctly, each redist, when it's in, when, at least when it's downloading, only about 3 to 5 meg in size. So unless you're really hurting for space and you think that these are going to magically free up a lot of it, I wouldn't touch it. But you know, the best thing that you could do is uninstall the oldest ones, keep the newest ones, assuming of course that you don't have anything that depends on it. If you go and uninstall them, what you can also do is find the latest version of that oldest one. So for example, you had 2005 RTM, you had updates for 2005, you might have a whole bunch of those. If you uninstalled them in reverse order and then just installed the latest one of the latest update, that may be enough.
Okay. All right. We have a ton of questions from Robbie. So I'm just going to bang through these. They're all about BitLocker.
Okay.
So it's going to be the rapid fire questions. Go. Have you ready? All right. If the system restore partition is 100 megabyte, will BitLocker work? I've been told that it needs 300.
It can still work with 100.
Okay. If the system restore partition needs to be 300 megabyte, how do you do it? Standard Windows 8.1 install is 100 meg. It doesn't need to be. So that's
right.
NA. All right. If Windows fails to boot, how can I access the data on the drive?
This is assuming that it has been BitLockered.
Yes.
Okay, so if it has been BitLockered, then you have to, when you're creating your BitLocker key, there's going to be a recovery key that you can put in.
And I learned the hard way
yes.
a long time ago. Watch that
so
show.
So you keep that key around. And if you need to recover, you can boot into an alternate OS and then input that recovery key. The other thing is when you're in BitLocker, when you're in a working system, you can export your key as a recovery agent key and then import that. You can pull the drive out, put it into another system, import that key, and then you'll be able to access
and
your BitLocker
And if you don't
contacts.
Have that key, can your system administrator get
well,
it for you?
Well, this is only if you're joined to a domain.
Yeah,
right?
But
so
if you're joined to a domain, your sysadmin might be able to help you.
It, assuming that they've provisioned everything correctly, then yes.
Assuming a lot of things, but for my own case, I lost a BitLocker drive and they were able to help me out, so that was
helpful. The funny thing with BitLocker for me is like, I would much rather just not have any sensitive information.
Yeah.
There's just too many times, like drives are not that reliable.
Yeah.
Right? So it's the worst possible scenario. You're in a place where you can't do a recovery right now, right? What you really want to just do is flatten the machine and get up and running again. And the data, well, I just don't carry sensitive data on portable systems.
Yeah. All right, if Windows fails, can I boot into the Windows 8.1 DVD and use the PIN to access the data?
Yeah, just no.
Put it on another machine. Can I move that drive to another system as a secondary drive and access the data? Will
you
the PIN
can.
Work?
You, yes. you can if you import the recovery agent certificate.
Okay. Will low-level disk utilities work if there are not low-level disk utilities for BitLocker?
I don't understand the low-level disk utilities part. So BitLocker is a driver, right? So at rest, your system is encrypted. So low-level disk utilities, you don't want it working on the encrypted data because all it will do is corrupt it.
Yes.
So I would stay away from any kind of offline low-level disk utilities because at best, it will corrupt your data.
Well, then you'll love this next question. A lot of BIOS have disk utilities. Will they work?
No.
All right.
Well, no is harsh, but
not going to help.
No is pretty harsh, but it is extremely unlikely. I've not seen a BIOS disk utility that knows anything about BitLocker or, frankly, any kind of full disk encryption software.
Okay. Will BIOS RAID software work, or do you need to build the RAID first?
BIOS RAID will absolutely work.
Okay.
Yes. So if you're using hardware level RAID, you can use BitLocker on that. No problem.
Okay. If I have a RAID with BitLocker, if I add another drive, will it work? Is it encrypted?
Yes, it should be.
Okay.
There should be no, like if you're talking about a RAID 5 or a mirror or anything like that.
Yeah,
as long as the system will just suddenly see additional space, right? And it will just continue to encrypt that.
Okay. Is the access PIN program stored in multiple places on the hard drive?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right, has the access program on the hard drive ever gotten corrupted?
No.
Ever is a hard one to answer.
Right, but, I mean, yeah. Corrupted by what means? By disk failure? I'm sure it has.
Yeah, yeah.
But that wouldn't necessarily be targeted to the pin access.
Okay. If the access program gets corrupted, are there utilities to fix it?
No, at that point, your problem is the BitLocker is now corrupt. Mm-hmm. Right, and you want to now decrypt it, and again, this is by putting the drive into another system.
Yep. Yeah. All right, can I reformat an encrypted drive with or without unlocking it? You could format a drive, right? What's going to stop you from formatting a drive? If you format it and it is BitLockered, though, is it going to format the BitLockered? Or?
I've not tried formatting a BitLockered drive.
I would just blast the partition and
I believe that you'd have to turn off BitLocker in order to format it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Good question. Are there any apps that don't work with BitLocker? Well, it's kind of transparent, isn't
it? It's completely transparent.
Yeah.
The only thing that might have an effect with BitLocker is low-level system utilities that load up other filter drivers that try to access the drive in a raw format.
Yeah.
Or again, if you're booting into an offline system that's trying to access that drive.
Okay.
So those types of apps would be affected by BitLocker, but most regular user apps, Word, Acrobat, Chrome, IE, those kinds of things, mm-hmm. they have absolutely no interference with BitLocker.
Sure. All right, if I can't unlock the drive due to bad sectors or correctable hard disk error, am I SOL? And usually I don't allow three-letter acronyms. I try to spell them out, but SOL, you'll have to do your own legwork.
Somewhat out of luck?
Yeah, somewhat out of luck.
Somewhat out of luck.
Bad sectors?
If
there's bad sectors,
if it is
hard disk errors?
If you're having hard disk errors, then it may not decrypt completely.
So will it just not decrypt that part of the hard drive?
Correct.
Or is the whole hard drive going to...
No, it would have disk errors at that point.
Okay, good. Can I undo or remove BitLocker without reinstalling?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. All right, well, that's all the questions. All right, next question. From Dimitri, is it possible for a tile to show the front page of a PDF file like it does for pictures? So can you get a preview?
So this is, I wonder if I can show it here with the reader app. I have a PDF. Okay. So this is the reader app, mm-hmm. and this is the thumbnail on a tile.
Yeah.
That we're talking about here. So they want to, Dimitri appears to want to emulate this or redo it. And I pointed to a article right here for how to include thumbnails within an app.
Mm-hmm.
And it is absolutely possible to do this. Right now, you'd have to create one that will handle the PDF, so you'll probably have to pre-render it and then take a bitmap of it.
Yeah.
But actually rendering the PDF is not that difficult. This particular article is HH465350. This talks all about how to create thumbnails in the Windows Store applications.
Okay. All right. And then next question from Rob. Rod, this is a little bit longer, but I just compressed it down. But he changed to a new router, used the same name and password as he did on the previous router, thinking, oh, I'll just fire up my computer and find it'll connect. And old laptops won't connect to it. So he's like, how do I resolve this?
So usually that happens because the encryption type is different.
Mm-hmm.
So the easiest way to do that is just to forget the existing network. So on your older machine, just right click on it, say forget, and then reassociate it with it, and then you should be fine.
Mm-hmm.
It really depends on how old the machine is. Like if you're talking about a system that doesn't understand WPA2, for example, with AES encryption, then you'll have some problems. But you'll want to go to your router, make sure that it is in fact using WPA2 with AES, That's the best one that you can get on a regular commercial home router.
Yeah.
And then go through and make sure that for all of your systems, you just forget it and then reassociate.
All right. From Devin, he says, hey, Gove and Larry, I have a question for you about undocking laptops. To undock our laptops, we just press the undock latch on the dock and take the laptop off. However, the laptops don't always seem to like it and tend to stop responding until we power them down and back on. We do that since we don't have any other options in Windows to undock, like an option to eject a USB thumb drive. Just wondering what the best practice is for undocking laptops.
So it will actually depend on the type of dock and the laptop and what other updates from the OEM are installed. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, if you're an ACPI system and we detect that you're actually a mobile device in a docking station, what you should be able to do is go to settings, power, and one of the options, obviously I don't have a docking station. In fact, I haven't had a docking station in about 10 years.
Yeah.
One of the options will actually be undock.
Okay.
In these power options. Now, if the other type of docking station is like what you have, a Targus.
Yeah, I've got a third party like Targus, plugs in USB 3.
Right. At that point, all you do is you unplug.
Yeah.
Now, you've said that you've had some issues with doing that.
Yeah, a couple of times I've unplugged and had some kind of issue because I have like 20 things plugged up to it and it's doing a display as well.
Right.
So unplugging from it is like a massive state change all at once.
So it, in those cases, it's usually driver related. Mm-hmm. What you can do, especially in your case, is disconnect the display first. So
yeah.
I don't mean physically disconnect the display. I mean in your display options.
Like Windows P,
exactly.
PC only.
Exactly. Disconnect that and then start unplugging.
Yeah.
You could always, you know, daisy chain if you really wanted to. I don't know what you have hooked up to your dock station. Do you have external drives as well plugged into it? Or
At times, yes.
So if you can go through the, you know, whatever is attached to USB here and eject whatever you can before you actually just pull the plug.
Yeah, okay. Next question, how can I get OneDrive in Windows 8.1 to download all my files to a folder to my machine and keep them synced? I can view the files, but I can't copy them anywhere else using the Windows copy and paste function. When copying and pasting, it gets stuck on 0% and never moves.
Okay, so what you want to do is go to the Modern OneDrive app, go to Settings, go to Options, and access all my OneDrive files offline. That will do a complete sync into your OneDrive folder, which would be over here, right here. That'll sync everything to your local machine. And then you'll be able to copy and paste. But however, the one thing you should realize is if you copy out of the OneDrive location, it will no longer be synced. So everything must be under that OneDrive location if you want it to stay synced with OneDrive.
Yeah, so Tempur-Pedic manual, that's what you keep in your OneDrive?
I was using this machine when I was setting up my new bed.
All right. Next question. How can you tell if a machine has Windows 8.1 or Windows 8.1 Update 1 installed?
Okay, so what you want to do is first you have to know the KB article.
Yeah.
KB 291-9355. And then you go to your installed updates under Control Panel Programs, Programs Features, Installed Updates. Look for that KB.
Okay.
291-9355.
And that is the
definitive way.
Definitive way.
Yes.
You could also look for power button on the modern start menu.
Yeah, depending on the form factor of your machine, if you went here and you see this power button.
Yeah.
That is one
That's
of the
one
other,
way.
That is one way, but is not definitive. The other method of going to look for the installed update is the only definitive method to
what
know
what would Gove do?
Oh, this all
right
all,
there, right.
Every way from Sunday.
Okay.
I have other indicators, however.
Yeah.
So, for example, the store tile that is pinned to the.
But I might have just done that on an older.
You might have.
Yeah.
Right. But again, most people don't.
Yeah. Okay.
Most people don't pin that.
All right. Some people don't. All right. I'm having a hard time getting Windows 8. I'm having a hard time getting Windows 8 into safe mode. What's the best way to do that? Well, the way that you're supposed to do it is you call Windows 8's name three times and it doesn't respond.
It's so, like calling Candyman.
Yeah, it's like Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. So you shut your machine down in the middle of starting up three times. That's one way to do it.
Yeah.
You could also go to advanced startup options in MSConfig and
yes.
set it to do it. Is there another way that I'm missing, or
what
would Gove do, is what we keep coming back to.
So you go to change PC settings, update and recovery, advanced startup. So you choose restart now, and then it will get you into the boot screen that will tell you if you want to go into the recovery console, assuming that one has been set up properly.
Yeah.
Which is definitely something that I've been doing on all new installs, is making sure that before it leaves me, that I can always get into a recovery console, that it's mm-hmm. always working. Because yes, it is a massive pain when you cannot properly boot and you have to boot off of something else in order to recover the system.
Yeah. Okay. All right, and it is pick of the week time. And this pick of the week is from MSR, and it's the Type Hover Swipe. So this is a little keyboard they're working on over at MSR that has some very low resolution cameras by each key, so it can see your fingers. So the entire keyboard is almost like a trackpad mm-hmm. for the most part. So you can see here, I don't know, should you skip forward and just jump to the fun part? So you can swipe around left, swipe right. You can even do a pinch to zoom. And we were talking about this morning. We both like it.
I really like this.
I would love to see more of this.
I mean, a virtual
steering wheel. Not the most
responsive
driving simulator, but
sure.
you know, pretty good for
a prototype,
you know, yeah.
Or a pre-prototype.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, and you can see the fingers there. That's about the resolution that you're getting. Which, hey, you're not going to use that to take any selfies, but
8-bit selfies.
Yeah, you can take some old gaming selfies of your fingers. But you know, that's not what it's for. It's for using it like a trackpad. So,
well,
pretty
also
interesting.
Yeah, I mean, also think about it in terms of, you know, in a kiosk scenario, it's just reduced amount of hardware that you have to deal with.
Yeah.
You know, less things to break.
Mm-hmm.
And just a more unified experience, right? Like,
yeah.
So you're not having to move your hand somewhere else. You're constantly on the keyboard,
yeah.
right? And you're doing everything that you'd normally do. So this is part of the, you know, human interface, the
yeah.
Natural gesture, natural interface.
Yeah, natural user interface. And I like it. I think it's a great next step. So I'll be looking forward to whatever happens with this. And by the way, MSR, we have this thing called Channel 9 that you can use for videos too. So, yeah. All right, so that's the show for this week. If you want to get in touch with us, you can write us at defragshow@microsoft.com, and we will see you next week.
Let us know about about your experiences with 8.1 Update 1.
Yeah.
Let us know how it goes. We love to hear that feedback.
Cool. All right, see you next week.
Take care.